Catching more flies with honey, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The overinflated spare tire of Medicare podcasts. And now, did he fire six shots or only five? It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hey, it is time for Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And I am your Lazy Man podcaster, Doug Jones, as you heard Drew McMillan just say. Drew McMillan, of course, is my my nephew and our Canadian announcer. He's an entertainer in Canada, and he happily crosses the border periodically so that he can record introductions for our podcast, the Lazy Man, the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Now, I am about as lazy as most men can be, and that's where I got the inspiration for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. But basically, what we want to do is introduce Medicare to people who, frankly, aren't that interested in becoming Medicare experts. They would like to know what they should do and why. And then they would like to have a little help executing those decisions. And then they never want to think about it again. So that's kind of what we do. We try to introduce Medicare in such a way that the Medicare is not threatening. It's not a scary thing. We want to introduce people to it in such a way that it's going to be a fairly benign and happy connection. But in any event, we have a 30-second radio spot that Randy and I put together, and we play occasionally. It explains why we're here, and I would like to ask Randy to play that right now.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Okay, that should tell you everything you need to know about why you're listening to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And that Randy I mentioned, that would be Randy Carson, and he's sitting right on the other side of the screen. Hello, Randy.
Hey, Doug. You look like you're just right here.
Well, but I know. You're
1,800 miles away. How can that be?
That's the magic of electrons. And yes. Frankly, if we weren't talking during the busy time of the day, our connection would be perfect. It'd be like we're in the same room.
There must be somebody else in the world that's attempting to use Zoom, because Zoom has been really, really finicky this morning.
Well, I'm hoping that at least our listeners can understand what we're talking about, because it does sound different when we play it back than it does when I'm hearing you through my headset. But, you know, if we forge ahead, then hopefully they will be able to understand what we're talking about and either like click us off if they don't like it, or listen raptly, taking notes. Oh, see, there's dinging. Is your big series of grandfather clocks going to go off in the hallway?
I see door closed. No, not right away. I think we're good for a couple minutes.
Okay, because often we hear the, and then when the grandfather clocks are going off, I have to sit there silently and count, you know, what time is it in Arizona? Because we are a couple of time zones away. But in any event, I didn't really have a whole lot of content prepared until this morning when I got an email from an insurance company. And it caused me to think about what happens with Medicare Advantage plans and very strong efforts to make the members of their plan, or customers, we could say, feel as though they're being loved and hugged and supported in their efforts to live a better life. Did you have a thought there, Randy?
Well, I was going to say, I have another label for those folks, not customers.
Boy.
not insureds. No, I was the word that immediately came to my mind, and you're going to know where I'm going with this because you know where my head is with Medicare disadvantage plans. Victims. Oh, victims. Yeah. That's what I say.
That's a very good designation to use for the members of their plan or their customers. You're going to have to take about 3 minutes of the breaking up out of the response there. So I'm hoping that doesn't butcher it too much. But I like the way you think. Victims is an excellent word. What happens is these Medicare Advantage companies are insurance companies, but they don't get their revenue primarily from their customers. They get their revenue from the federal government. So I am, in addition to the 10 reasons that you'll find in my book as to why Medicare Advantage plans are probably less than desirable for most people, including reasons like lack of freedom, tiny networks of doctors and hospitals that they won't pay your bills if you go to any doctor or hospital that's not part of their networks, and many reasons like that. We also have the problem that the federal government has a lot of control over these plans, and you don't have the freedom of choice that you would have if you had a Medicare supplement plan. So these Medicare Advantage plans basically are able to take money from the federal government. They get a per person allowance, like maybe $2,500 per person per year. The feds will pay that to any plan. Like if a plan signs up 100 people, then the feds will write them a check for $2,500 times 100. And that money sometimes is not enough, because if they enroll people in their Medicare Advantage plan who have medical problems, now they've got to pay more to the doctors and to the hospitals that treat those people. Some of the problems would be diabetes and cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer, that kind of thing. And so they've come up with a nifty little way to reach back into the taxpayer's pocket to drag even more money out of the budget and put it into the pockets of the insurance companies that run these Medicare Advantage plans. And that is to identify which of the members of the plan have certain medical problems, go back to the federal government and ask for additional money over and above the, let's say, $2,500 that they got originally for each person. So how are they going to find the people that their plan insures that have certain medical problems that the government has agreed to pay extra for? Well, they're going to go out and ask them for their medical history. But I guess they don't think they would get enough cooperation to identify all of these sick people without wrapping that request in the guise of sugarcoating it in the guise of, oh, we want to know all about you so we can help you live a better life. And for the agents like me, they say, you know, we want to help our clients live a better life, so we're going to pay you extra for each questionnaire that you have filled out. In reality, it's all a big fat lie, folks. And what they're doing is they're trying to identify the people that have certain special medical histories so they can go back to the federal government and say, oh, we want more money. Now, there is a program that's been instituted this year which offers diabetics an advantageous cost for their insulin. And I know insulin cost has been a problem for a lot of diabetics. I don't know much about it personally. I certainly don't have any personal experience. But this is a year in which there was a model called the Part D Senior Savings Model. So this allows diabetic supplies and insulin to be purchased under a Part D plan with a very benign cost sharing, like $35 a month. There are certain carriers that are providing plans that cover the diabetic supplies and insulin for a maximum of $35 a month. So that should be good news to some of these people that are not able to afford the higher cost of insulin and so forth. But when we come back to this identification of the people that have diabetes, the method of identification is like a big fat lie to me. So you've got an insurance company that says, we want to pay each agent a fee for every questionnaire that your clients complete. And then we want to turn around and collect more money from the federal government, and then we'll give your clients some extra stuff. And it starts to sound like a Joe Namath television ad for magical, everything is free in the world and you deserve this stuff. We provide members a prepaid Visa card to help pay for a variety of products and services like utilities, gas, electric and water, telecommunications, internet, cell and home phone bill. What do these things have to do with health insurance? Transportation, bus, train, taxi, and rideshare. Yes, Randy.
Yes. I'm just shaking my head because it's beginning to sound a lot like Joe Namath. And the fact of the matter is what you're describing is there used to be a concept in the old West called bounty hunters.
Oh, yeah.
They're setting up an insurance agent to be a bounty hunter.
Yep. They're saying, look, if you go out and get this, grab this guy by the neck and drag him back in, dead or alive, we'll pay you a certain amount of money. In this case, we're not dragging anybody anywhere, but we're dragging the information about these people, which, you know, all this privacy crap that Ted Kennedy got started, you know, it's all a bunch of horse manure because it drives up the cost of insurance for everybody, this HIPAA stuff, and it also makes the trial lawyers pretty happy too because they get to sue people with deep pockets if somebody violates HIPAA laws. Well, now we have a clear violation of HIPAA laws, but everybody seems to smile about it because, hey, it just gets more money from the federal budget. I forgot to list one of these magical freebies they tell you that your little prepaid Visa card is going to help pay for is expenses for education. It says K-12, college, and trade schools. Now, none of this has anything to do with health insurance. The only thing that makes me feel good about this method of providing health insurance for people, that is taking money from the federal government, giving it to the insurance company, and say, here, treat people, and then you keep whatever leftover profit you have. That's the way original Medicare should have been set up, and that would have saved us a ton of money. Instead, what they have is giant building in Washington and then offices all over the country with the Social Security Administration employees who handle the Medicare portion of their responsibilities. But what do? They have to hire people. They have to pay not only their salaries, but they also have fringe benefits, and they're paying into a retirement fund. And then at some point, these people retire with very generous retirement benefits. And until the day they die, the federal government is paying through the nose for these employees. The smart thing about Medicare Advantage plans is the federal government doesn't hire anybody, so they don't have somebody working with them for 20, 30 years and then sucking retirement benefits out of the system. They're just writing a check every year. Oh, you got how many people insured? Okay, well, here's a check for, let's say, 2,500 times all those people. So that's the better way that Medicare should have been set up in the first place. Other than that, there's nothing really that I see about Medicare Advantage plan that's going to be advantageous to anybody except somebody that can scam all of this free stuff. And how are you going to do that? Well, you're going to do it by either being destitute or you're going to do it by convincing the insurance company that they're going to be able to convince the federal government to give them more money. I don't know. I can't even talk anymore. It's just it's a disgusting set of circumstances. And I don't like the direction it's going because this stuff that they give these people has nothing to do with health insurance. If they concentrated on health insurance, the health results would be much more spectacular and they wouldn't be in the business of serving meals to people and providing rides to people and all this other garbage. So I don't know. People ask me why I drink. It's stuff like this.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, the funny part of not, I shouldn't say funny, but the interesting part about this whole concept is it's not, doesn't seem like it's getting any better. Everybody seems to be running around going, I want the free stuff, but they don't understand, in my opinion, that the free stuff actually comes at a cost. Less care, less health care, less service, more profit for the insurance company, but there's only a small percentage of that goes to the actual care of the
Absolutely.
Clients.
And in fact, we've seen what happens because of federal government investigators. We've seen what happens when these companies figure out that they can make money by refusing the benefits that they've promised people. So they, you know, they tell people you can go see a specialist if your doctor agrees that you need that treatment. So they go see the doctor. The doctor says, no, you can't go see a specialist because the plan tells me not to let anybody go see a specialist. And so the people leave and their problem is not solved. So then what do? They either drop the whole subject and never pursue it again. They go to the specialist themselves, but they have to pay for it out of their pockets because the plan's not going to pay because they didn't have proper permission to go see the specialist. Or they can file a grievance or an appeal for that decision to get that decision changed. And as you and I saw, federal investigators have discovered that a lot of these Medicare Advantage plans have played a game and they've said, hey, most of the people that we refuse are just going to go away and never file an appeal. So we'll just refuse everybody. And then the few people that file an appeal, we'll roll over and give them the money that they want. We'll say, yes, they can go see a specialist and we'll pay for it. They'll ask for a special procedure to be done. And if we deny them permission and they appeal, then we'll say, yes, you can have that special procedure. And only like 1 out of 100 people ever comes back to do the appeal. So it'll be a big source of revenue for us. So that's, yes.
I think it's a process very similar to what I ran into. Now, this is decades ago, you know, back when your driver's license was engraved on, you know, like a piece of hard wax. I went, you know, when I was 16 years old back in the Nebraska to get my driver's license, we could get it when you were 16. And I rolled in there, and keep in mind, I was born and raised on a ranch. I've been driving stuff since I could, you know, reach the pedal.
Oh, yeah.
And I rolled in there, and one of the things that they had me do was to parallel park. And the law in the book said that your tires, whatever you want to call them, had to end up within 18 inches of the curb after the parallel parking was done. However, I got flunked my first time out because my wheels were too close to the curb. Now, I'm not saying they were on the curb. I had them within 2 inches. It was perfect. I got flunked because I was too close to the curb. Then I found out that this particular license examiner, just to make sure the 16-year-olds in the state didn't get a big head, he flunked the first 16-year-old test every time.
Okay,
that's
exactly what I'm talking about. And then how many 16-year-olds came back and the and did they actually learn anything from that? This reminds me of my two-star or one-star review that we talked about a month or two ago, where the guy said, I'm giving this guy a bad review because this book makes Medicare too simple. It can't possibly be this simple. So
that's right. It's too freaking simple. Oh, do you want the bigger book? Okay, here, yeah. I'll send you one that you know, here's one just like it, except for it's much heavier and thicker, but the last 453 pages are intentionally left blank because it won't tell you anymore.
But the nice thing is that if a burglar breaks into your house, you could beat him to death with the book, so that's good. You can use it
yes,
for a weapon.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Well, you know,
we're going to have to land the plane. We've again run out of steam.
But I'm not through whining and complaining yet. I've got more complaints.
Oh, my God. Somebody in my past life used to use an expression, Do you want a little wine with that cheese? Or, you know, what? Or, no, it's the other way around. Do you want a little cheese with that wine?
Yeah, that's one way to do it. And the other thing is there used to be Jewish American princess jokes. And they'd call them Japs. And what does a Jap make for dinner? Reservations. And what's a Jap's favorite wine? I want to go to Miami. Take me to Miami.
Yeah, what is it with the East? Everybody wants to go to Florida. I used to work in Florida when I was, you know, like I was a road warrior for a technology company. They got bugs bigger than frickin' B-52s down there.
I don't like bugs, and I pay a guy in Arizona a lot of money to make sure I never have to have a contact or an interaction with a bug. But I will say that when I've been to Florida and it rains, the rain is warm. When I've been to Arizona and it rains, the rain is cold. I like warm better than I like cold. Another thing I don't like about Florida is the traffic. Everybody lives like 1 mile from the coast. So if you want to go someplace, it's going to take you forever to get there. And then you got to go back. So
I'll never forget. I was on the phone, conversing with Mrs. Technologist one night from my hotel. I was down there for a week or 10 days in Orlando or some freaking place down there. And I'm on the phone with Mrs. Technologist, and I'm laying on the bed, looking up at the ceiling while I'm talking. I said, hold on just a second. I looked up a little bit closer, and there was a lizard walking across the roof of my hotel room. And
I'd rather have a lizard than a bug.
Yeah, I said, hold on. There's a lizard walking across the roof of my hotel room. And I called the front desk, and I said, you know, there's lizards in my room. And they said, well, hey, it kills the stuff that's worse, so don't worry about it.
When I was 10 years old, I spent 4 weeks in Florida, and I came home with a couple of chameleons. And I can't remember what color the upholstery in the car was, but they were walking around in the seats of the car, and they never really changed to whatever color we had. I don't even remember what kind of car it was, but when I got home, I had them on little chameleon leashes, and I thought, boy, they want to go out and, you know, mess around in the grass.
Oh, my gosh, chameleon leashes. Now I've really heard it all.
Well, my dog came along and snapped them both up with one mouthful and ran away.
Your dog didn't have a bit of trouble finding them.
He was fine. I mean, they were the same color as the grass, but he recognized that they were food and the grass was not food. And so that was the end of my – and the leashes. I think he swallowed my little chameleon leashes with the chameleons.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you because I went to
I'm
the
not
state –
I'm not laughing, so you're not laughing with me.
I went to the state fair back in the Midwest, and they had chameleons on sale. As we're walking down the midway of the state fair, I did everything I could think of to convince my mother I could have a chameleon. Ask me how many chameleons I ever got a hold of.
I bet it was zero or a
zero, zero chameleons.
Well, I can only say that your dog would have appreciated it had you actually come home with a chameleon or two.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I have enjoyed this conversation immensely. But guess what? We're out of time.
We're also out of chameleons.
We're out of chameleons. There's only so many chameleons in the world. But yeah. I always wanted to have one to see if I could set it on a polka dot piece of cloth to see what would happen.
Well, I can tell you that they didn't match Lincoln upholstery very well, and I don't think they matched Ford upholstery very well. So I don't know if we had like plaid or whatever, but They were very apparent in the car. It's when you put them in the grass that your dog comes along and eats them.
Oh, yeah. maybe they just wanted to do it in because they were tired of being on leashes.
They probably saw winter coming. Oh, my God, it's going to get cold and snowy, and we're going to die. We're going to die.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, Doug, I've enjoyed the heck out of this. Thank you for joining us. And the audience, thank you for joining us. Without you, we would be having just a conversation together that would not be nearly as much fun. So in the meantime, you've just spent about 32 and a half minutes listening to Doug Jones, the real deal from Oklahoma.
The chameleon hunter.
the chameleon hunter. Yes, absolutely. And he is the real deal and the sole proprietor of MedicareForTheLazyMan.com. But don't forget to go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and get your book. Get your books now while they're hot, because they are going to save you money and keep you sane during the sign-up process for Medicare.
See you next time, people.